This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. Heavy seasonal rains and strong winds affected most parts of Malaysia from mid-December 2014, and that continued until early this month. The rains caused severe flooding in several states, claiming lives and displacing almost a quarter of a million people in its wake. It would seem that here in Malaysia, flood control has focused on reactive measures and practices, but are there proactive measures available in flood forecasting and flood mitigation? Well, Dr. Lawal Bilal is an assistant professor at the School of Geography, University of Nottingham, Malaysia. He joins me to discuss his area of research, which focuses on geospatial applications in environmentally planning and management, particularly in flood forecasting and monitoring urban planning. Welcome to the show. How are you today, Dr. Lawal?
Thank you very much.
Dr. Lawal, as I mentioned, Malaysia experienced some of the worst flooding it has ever seen. In your opinion, what were some of the reasons the rainfall and monsoon was so severe? I mean, I can remember this monsoon from the time I was a little girl, but it's been quite severe the last couple of weeks or so. Why do you think that's been the case?
Well, from what we are observing, there's been a multi-pronged effect. Causes of this particular flood. Now, apart from the northwest monsoon winds bringing in cold winds from Siberia and central China and blowing over the South China Sea, what has also happened is that there's been some sort of evidence of some warming of the South China Sea as a result of winds blowing from the south east. So a combination of these together with other environmental issues which due to certain neglects have resulted in this particular intensity of flood that we've experienced since December.
Are you saying that climate change and global warming is at least in part responsible for the severe flooding?
Yes, we can attribute it to it, but not entirely. In terms of the intensity of rainfall and the changes in pattern in terms of the duration and the amount of rainfall that we receive within a short time, we can attribute part of this to climate change. But overall, in terms of flooding on the ground, there are other factors that come into play. Land use management, and in the case of the flooding which also happened as a result of the warming of the South China Sea, there were certain evidence of the rise in the sea level which also resulted in the blockage of runoffs emptying into the South China Sea. So a lot of runoff which could have entered South China Sea through the confluence of the major rivers in Kelantan and parts of Terengganu found itself blocked, and as a result it only had to move.
There was a backflow. What are some of the reasons this confluence would be blocked? What blocks it? What causes it?
Well, in this case we talked of a lot of causes for this particular flood. Part of it, we had the full moon, which results in high tide. Mm-hmm. We also have the warming of the South China Sea. Then we have the northwest monsoon winds during this period. So the rise in the tide resulted in some blockage of the river.
Okay, got it.
Yes. Resulted in the blockage of the river. So we cannot generally say maybe the entire amount of rainfall, if not because of the rising tide, could have easily found its way back into sea. There could have been some flood, not the magnitude of flood that we experienced. Okay. So there were so many complicated factors in this particular event. Nobody could have prepared for it. Yeah.
I was reading an article where somebody said that, we have come to a stage we cannot fight the floods anymore. We need to accept it and we need to figure out a way of how to move forward from here, because this is probably going to be a phenomenon which will be facing us, or we will be facing this phenomenon going forward, whether we like it or not. The magnitude may even get worse. What are ways around it?
Well, preparedness. We should all be prepared in terms of our land use management, in terms of disaster management, and in terms of our hydrological monitoring. There are tools now available to do this, and if we put these tools into efficient research work and come out with possible solutions which would give us some sort of stable systems that can withstand some of the changes we are facing, I think that will be very useful. One important thing too that can be taken note of is that most of the drainage systems that are existing in major towns are still the old systems which have not been updated in terms. I believe there are some changes with new development, but major part of the urban centers have still got drainage systems which are below the changes in terms of capacity of flash floods that they can run, below that capacity now. So we need to upgrade this. Now, this comes with policy changes in development controls in this, and all of this government needs to take into account.
Are you saying that all objective of flood management can only be accomplished by incorporating them into effective policy?
Well, yes, and regular updates. It shouldn't be a policy which is there and it remains there for 20, 25 years. There are changes, and with the changes or the rapid pace at which we are observing climate change, I believe that every 10 years we should begin to have some sort of updates to see whether changes will be required in terms of how we manage our drainage systems and some of the policies that are in place for disaster management, especially flood disasters.
You co-authored a research paper called Effect of Climate Change on Seasonal Monsoon Asia and its Impact on the Variability of Monsoon Rainfall in Southeast Asia. What was the objective of that study?
Well, the objective of this particular study was to explore, to see whether there were real patterns of change in terms of increment. Now, globally, as part of the climate, studies show that there is increase in rainfall globally as a result of temperature increases. But are these increases in rainfall experienced everywhere, and specifically with Southeast Asia, are we having increases? Mm-hmm. What the study shows is that in Southeast Asia, there are no significant increases in the rainfall pattern, but the erraticness of this rainfall and the duration, the intensity of it is changing. You have short spells of periods where you have huge amount of rainfall, having rainfall of about 550 millimeters within just 2 weeks, that can cause a lot of damage. So it's pattern that we've been able to establish within this particular study.
You know. Can we study these patterns and predict rainfall going forward? And as a result, of course, you know, brace ourselves for floods and all other, you know.
Well, we can study these patterns, but from the way things are going with regards to climate change, it looks as if predicting scenarios that will occur are always very difficult.
Okay.
Who thought you could have moist monsoon, northeast monsoon winds coming in, and at the same time you have a coincidental full moon?
That's right.
And at the same time you would have issues of environmental management at the same time.
Issues of environmental management, I think, is in our full control.
Yes, that is
probably the only factor in our control.
Yes, in our control, but with predicting the floods, I think that we're still a long way in fully managing that.
And the impact of rapid urbanization and climate change, what were your findings?
Well, urbanization results in wide areas being built up, and built up areas naturally attract a lot of heat, which results to urban heat islands in areas. Knowing that warming of an urban area can result in a whole lot of other developments which affects the local or microclimate of the given area. So what urbanization has got an impact in terms of our climate change, but these are localized climate change. In the global perspective, you begin to see that these are having serious impacts on the overall changes we are experiencing with regards to climate.
You mentioned in your study some factors that promoted the monsoon strengthening in Asia. What are these factors?
Well, the strengthening of monsoons in Asia, it's simply that we're having a lot of new developments which are coming in, and we are having a lot of changes, development in terms of economic development with regards to, let's say, China. China is a country which is, within the last few decades, grown at a pace where they needed a lot of resources to develop. Now, with these resources and their growing middle income, a lot of industries have been developed. This results in a lot of CO2 being emitted into the atmosphere, and this increases the temperature of the region. Now, apart from that too, we've got the effects of the Tibetan Plateau, mm-hmm. which has got an effect on what is happening in terms of the monsoon climate. The monsoon climate is a very wide sort of climate environment of itself, including southern part of China and most part of Southeast Asia. So any changes that are experienced within this, from southern part of India all the way to the parts of Philippines, all of this has got an effect of some of the changes that we are experiencing with regards to the monsoon.
In Asia. Okay. We're discussing geospatial applications in environmental planning. Dr. Lawal Bilal in the studio with me. If you have a question for him, send it through 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. Dr. Lawal Bilal, who's an assistant professor from the School of Geography, University of Nottingham, Malaysia, in the studio with me. We're discussing geospatial applications in environmental planning, particularly in flood forecasting. I mean, we just went through some of the worst floods in many, many years, actually. And, I think the question is, at the top of many of our minds, is that, have we done enough in terms of flood mitigation? What could we have done better to have helped the people living in those areas respond to the floods in a more effective manner and, you know, sort of reduce the damage? Dr. Lawal, I think that was a huge cause for concern. But before we come back to the floods, can you explain the methodology? Because I understand you studied the Langat River Basin.
Yeah.
Why here, and what were you actually looking for?
Well, what we were looking for was try to replicate a flood event by simulating the amount of rainfall that is likely to fall with a given area. So with remote sensing application, we use satellite images to monitor cloud movements. The meteorological department have got series of satellite images which they monitor. That's how they're able to focus different weather events or the impending rainfall events. So what we've done, and knowing that we are not able to simply monitor an entire catchment area, which comes to the question we began with in your discussion, is a flood only related to the center of an urban area or the entire catchment? Meteorological departments have got radar systems which cover strictly the urban center, but these don't have an extensive coverage for the entire catchment area. But we've got satellite images like what we call the AVHR, that is advanced very high resolution imagery coming from NOAA. And we've got also the GMS, that is geospatial meteorological data sets. Now, these have got a very, very wide coverage. An entire catchment or basin area can be covered. So having this in mind, we could simply monitor the movement of cloud-based rainfall cells, and based on that, we should be able to extract some rainfall amount from them. This is a 1D cloud model. After this study had been conducted, or even during the time this study was being conducted, other instruments were coming which could have given us much better information, because these instruments are able to give a vertical profile of the cloud, which is an add-on to some of the information that we were trying to extract from the satellite image. So based on a 1D cloud model, we are able to develop some sort of cloud indexing techniques by understanding the reflectance above the cloud, the height of the clouds, and the density within the clouds. We should be able to establish some relationships which gives us some estimation of rainfall that can fall within a given area. So that is what we were trying to establish. We used a flood event which had occurred, and there was enough data stored for that particular period in terms of satellite imagery. So this allows us to put these satellite imagery in terms of the hourly rainfall measurements, which will be recorded directly at the rainfall stations or at the meteorological stations. So we can correlate our estimation from these satellite images with the rainfall observed from given rainfall stations, and input this information, estimated rainfall, into a hydrological model and simulate the runoff situation. Now, if based on that particular study, we saw we could have very high accuracy, level of accuracy, not as accurate as what you would have got directly from the rainfall stations, you would get a good coverage, almost the same coverage of the rainfall that fell and flooded this given area. So that was the relationship we were trying to establish.
Yeah. Geospatial technologies. You want to explain what that is?
Geospatial technologies are technologies which involve GIS, GPS, and remote sensing application. GIS is a tool, geographical tools, which deals with reference data, which have got geographical coordinates in them. And this data set can be stored within a computer-based system, manipulated in different ways, and used for different analysis. They are becoming very widespread. GPS application is basically the constellation of this GPS, which allows us to pinpoint exactly our locations for different areas, knowing the exact coordinates of our given location, remote sensing, the use of satellite to capture data from the ground.
I'm thinking, Dr. Lawal, with all of this technology, it is a lot, it is, a, what is the word I'm looking for now? It is very doable to forecast floods going forward.
Yes.
We shouldn't have an excuse. We've got all this technology. And why is it still so difficult to forecast floods?
Well, if it's a stable weather system, you can forecast it. But as we have repeatedly mentioned, it's not a stable weather system. We are having erratic systems nowadays, and particularly seeing the pattern of floods which are occurring now. Malaysia, when you study the pattern of floods in Malaysia, every 3 to 5 years you should expect some kind of major flood in Malaysia. But when it's going to happen within the monsoon season, you cannot easily be able to determine. And how intense is it going to be, it's difficult to really capture. So it will be, even if you have the system, developed system, you will still have some difficulties to entirely base your forecasting on the technology. There would still be issues of errors to be encountered.
Heather is asking, what types of buildings are best for flood-prone areas? Should that be taken into account?
Well, yes, it should be taken into account, but it's more or less not what type of buildings, but where the buildings are located. It's where the buildings are located. Now, we should be able to use tools and technologies to identify potential flood-prone areas. Now, having that in mind, this should be a part of our planning and management system. There are some areas which we know are waterways or drainage ways. Now, constructing a building there, no matter how solid the building is, you still have floods. So it's not the material, it's not like earthquake. It's more of the location, where to put your building. I don't believe that a lot of buildings collapsed during this particular flooding. What has happened is that the buildings have been inundated.
Yeah.
So it's more of location rather than the building itself.
And all of this is part of urban planning?
Yes, it's part of urban planning. Vulnerable areas should be identified. Vulnerable areas not in terms of floods alone, but also in terms of what? Other precursors or other post-effects of flooding, like landslides. All of these should be identified and isolated such that construction should either be strengthened or controlled entirely from that area.
So mapping flooding in urban conditions, does it have everything to do with urban planning?
Yes, it's got
everything to do with urban planning.
Yes, it's got.
Have we failed miserably then?
I don't think not. I don't think we failed. It's just that we are being overrun by the changes in event.
To be challenged.
Yes, we are being overrun by changes in event, and we have not really revisited the policies which were existing. We're still maintaining the old policies without really quickly updating them. I believe as time goes on, these changes will come. Now the capacity of the drainage systems will be increased, and we'll begin to see a lot of changes. But we cannot entirely stop the floods from occurring. They will occur, but we'll be able to minimize the damage, especially in very vulnerable areas.
Do you think geospatial technologies are going to play, or is it playing a big role already here in Malaysia as far as floods or the flood forecasting and, you know, mitigation is concerned?
It is playing a very important role, but it's still going to be an important tool, because I believe the disaster management unit under the Prime Minister's department have got a lot of expertise in the application of geospatial technologies. And what should be seen is that there should be some sort of collaboration with people who are already within that research areas, mainly from public and private institutions. This will help them have up-to-date research that is taking place as input into the system. The dynamism of the flood is always changing, and so should be the technological applications of it. So they can get this input from the educational institutions. So a collaboration with these educational institutions will bring in a lot of valuable inputs that they require within this geospatial technology. They've got well-established geospatial units which are already in place. But how efficiently are they using these tools? This is where more effort should be put.
Yeah. Aside from geographical solutions, are there other steps that we can take to reduce our vulnerability to flooding?
Well, preparedness, awareness. Now, this comes from the already in place, that is the disaster management plan, which is already in place, how to provide early warning to people, how to make sure, based on their existing policies and guidelines, people do respect controls, development controls, you know, no construction within a particular given area. That should be respected. The way we clear the environment for agricultural purposes, so land use management, so a lot of other things come into play to support the geospatial tools which are already available.
An initiative dubbed Sustainable Deltas 2015 was launched last month at a conference in Rotterdam, the Dutch port city that includes neighbourhoods about 20 feet below sea level. It aims to share the tools developed in the Netherlands and elsewhere with the rest of the world. How important is it to share flood mitigation strategies with at-risk countries? Because we could possibly learn from the Netherlands, but what do we also need to take into consideration?
Well, the environments are different. That's something that we should take into consideration. But they, from history, have learned a lot in terms of controlling the sea from flooding the land. So they've got these
Which is in a way what happened here as well in December.
Yes.
When, because of the rise of sea level, of the full moon and all of that.
All right. So, yes, we can learn part of that from there. But we have got the flood, which are also coming just from rainfall events. Not necessarily, it's not every time that we get issues of the sea level rise having an impact, or issues of tsunamis. But learning the techniques they've used to control these, be it spatial tools or certain policies they've used to manage and control flooding within, will greatly help our policymakers to be able to provide informed decisions and change some of their policy guidelines in terms of our development. So it's very useful.
Dr. Lowell, just to conclude, I mean, what's coming through from the very beginning of this interview is that you finally shed some light on the factors that have contributed to the floods. I didn't realize about the full moon and the rise in the sea level and, you know, our waterways getting blocked and all of that. So what's coming through is we need to beef up urban planning. We need to relook our policies in relation to urban planning. technology is there
yeah.
at our disposal. We need to make full use of it, which we're not at the moment. And we can't beat climate change or global warming. So we need to hence relook how to take that into consideration and how to brace ourselves for the floods. Because as you said, it's going to happen. Every 3 to 5 years, it's going to happen. Mm. How do we then work with that? Our level of preparedness, all of that. We have a lot of work to do.
Well, I would not say a lot of work, because part of the work is already existing as part of the disaster management plans already existing. You just need to update them and make sure that these plans are implemented. And some of the controls which are already existing are being observed, you know. So part of it is there. It's just it's not that there are no plans. They exist. But how to consolidate them and make them effective, this is what should be done. The new technologies which are coming in should also be incorporated as time goes on. So there should be regular monitoring and update of these disaster management plans with new developments, new research coming in.
Your message on geospatial applications in environmental planning?
Well, it's a very important tool, and with the changes we are getting in terms of climate and environmental change, these two terms are becoming very synonymous. It's going to be very important as time goes on for this particular technology, that's geospatial science. At the University of Nottingham, we've got an environmental program at the undergraduate level that is under the School of Bioscience. In the School of Geography, we've got a postgraduate program. In these two programs, we have developed streams where students, as they go study the program, are able to follow. Students who join our undergraduate program can either take the conservation stream, that is ecology and conservation, or they can take the climate and environmental change stream, or they can take their geospatial technology streams. So unlike other environmental programs which are being run by other institutions, we've been able to provide students with these
three more specialized areas.
Mm-hmm. So it's up to the student's interest to identify these areas and be able to develop skills in it. There are most likely going to be a lot of jobs in the environment, considering the changes we are having with the environment. And at the postgraduate level, we've got environmental management that's under the School of Geography. These streams are also effectively emphasized as part of our training for our postgraduate students.
You're absolutely correct. Yeah. There's going to be a lot of opening for jobs in the field of the environment going forward.
Yes.
It was a pleasure having you on. Thank you for sharing your thoughts with us. Dr. Lawal Bilal, Assistant Professor, School of Geography, University of Nottingham, Malaysia, on geospatial applications in environmental planning, particularly in flood forecasting, on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.